episode 10 of Rubber Duck Radio. I am your host with the most, Tim Williams, and along for the ride, or maybe more appropriately, in the co-pilot chair is Paul Mason.
Hey Tim, good to be back. How's your week?
You know, pretty good actually. Had one of those weeks where things just clicked. You know those rare weeks where the code flows, the meetings are productive, nobody asks you to circle back on anything?
Oh, I know those weeks. They're like unicorns. Rare, mythical, and you're never sure if they actually happened or you just imagine them.
Exactly. But it did get me thinking about something that's been rattling around in my head for a while now. Something that comes up in almost every project I've ever worked on.
Let me guess. Another one of those phrases that sounds good in a meeting but makes developers cringe?
Oh yeah, the big one. Keep it simple.
Yes. The phrase that launched 1,000 over-engineered projects, or under-engineered ones, depending on how you interpret it.
Yeah. So I've lost count of how many times a project kickoff has included some variation of keep it simple, usually from someone in senior leadership. And every time I have to bite my tongue because what they mean and what I hear are two completely different things.
Yeah, I know exactly where this is going, the translation problem.
What they mean is the end product should feel simple to the user. What I hear is don't over-engineer this. And those aren't the same thing at all. The first one might require enormous complexity to achieve. The second one is about restraint in the build. I wish I had a better way to explain that distinction in a way that actually lands with executives.
Right, because simple is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence, and you know it's carrying different cargo depending on who's saying it. To leadership, simple means the user experience is frictionless. To a developer, simple means the code is straightforward and maintainable. Those can actually be in tension with each other.
Exactly. And that's what I want to dig into today, what I'm calling the simplicity paradox. The idea that simple on the surface almost always means hidden complexity underneath. And the danger is when you mistake one kind of simple for another.
Let's do it. I've got some thoughts on this one.
So let's start with a concrete example. Imagine you're building a project management system. Leadership says, keep it simple. What does simple look like to the end user?
Simple means I don't have to log into yet another system. Simple means I can just respond to an email and the system captures it. Simple means every button does exactly what I expect it to do, nothing more, nothing less. Simple means, you know, I never have to read a manual or watch a tutorial video.
Right. Affordances that make sense, clear paths through the workflow, no manual. But here's the thing, that simplicity, it's expensive. You don't get there by keeping the build simple. You get there by doing user testing, gathering feedback, iterating on the UX, building orchestration layers under the surface that handle all the edge cases the user never sees.
Totally. The user doesn't care that there's a background job parsing their email, extracting the task, matching it to a project, handling the case where the project doesn't exist, handling the case where they misspelled someone's name, handling the case where they replied to a notification that's like 3 weeks old and the project is now archived. All of that complexity is invisible to them.
And that's the right outcome. But if leadership thinks keep it simple means don't build all that complexity, what they're actually asking for is a system that doesn't work, or works for the happy path and falls apart the moment anything goes slightly sideways.
Which is worse, honestly. A system that obviously doesn't work, you can fix. A system that works most of the time but fails unpredictably, that's a support nightmare.
This reminds me of something I think about a lot. A car is simple in principle. You get in, there's a round thing you turn to go left or right, there's a pedal to make it go, a pedal to make it stop, that's it. Steering wheel, gas, brake, three controls. A child can understand the concept in like 30 seconds.
But under the hood, literally, there's an engine with thousands of moving parts. There's a transmission, a differential, a fuel injection system, an ECU running millions of lines of code, sensors everywhere, safety systems, emissions controls. The complexity is staggering.
Yeah. And if you tried to build a simple car by stripping away all that complexity, you'd end up with a wagon. A wagon is simple. A wagon has a steering mechanism and it has wheels. But a wagon can't do what a car does. It's simple and therefore, you know, useless for most of what we use cars for.
That's the distinction I want to nail down. There are two kinds of simple. There's simple because the complexity is hidden from you. That's the car. And there's simple and therefore useless. That's the wagon.
The car is the first kind. The wagon is the second. Both are simple from the user's perspective, but only one of them actually works for the job. The problem is, when leadership says keep it simple, they're usually picturing the car but asking for the wagon. So let's bring in some principles that help us navigate this. First one, Gall's Law. Have you run into this one?
Gall's Law, that's the one about complex systems evolving from simple systems, right? John Gall, systems theorist?
Exactly. John Gall wrote in 1975, "A complex system that works is invariably found to have evolved from a simple system that worked. A complex system designed from scratch never works and cannot be patched up to make it work. You have to start over with a working, simple system."
Which sounds like it contradicts what we just said about the car. The car is complex, and it works. But wait, the first cars were like pretty simple, right? Just an engine, a transmission, wheels. They evolved over a century into the complex machines we have today.
Well, but you kind of did. The first cars were basically motorized carriages. They broke down constantly. They were dangerous. Over decades, we added complexity to solve those problems. Seatbelts, airbags, crumple zones, fuel injection, anti-lock brakes. Each addition made the car safer and more reliable, but also, you know, more complex.
Okay, that tracks. So Gall's Law is about how complexity should emerge, not be declared. You start with something that works, and you add complexity to make it work better or do more. You don't start with a vision of a complex system and try to build it all at once.
Right. And it's a warning against the big design upfront approach. When leadership wants a complex system with a simple interface, and they want it all specified before a single line of code is written, that's exactly what Gall's Law says won't work. You can't know what complexity you need until you've built something simpler and, you know, learned from it.
What about Occam's Razor? I feel like that one gets misused a lot in technical discussions.
Oh, absolutely. Occam's Razor says the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. The key word there is usually. It's a heuristic, not a law. It's saying that among competing explanations, the one with the fewest assumptions has a higher probability of being correct. Higher probability, not certainty.
Yeah, I've seen that go sideways. Someone says the simplest solution is X and treats it like a trump card. Like Occam's Razor is a rule that the universe must follow. But sometimes the simplest explanation is wrong. Sometimes the correct explanation involves more assumptions because, you know, reality is genuinely complex.
Exactly. Occam's Razor is a thinking tool, not a substitute for thinking. It's useful for prioritizing which explanations to investigate first. It's not useful for declaring which explanation must be true. When someone says the simplest solution is obviously correct, that's not Occam's Razor. That's intellectual laziness dressed up in a philosopher's name.
Which brings us to Einstein.
Einstein's principle. He famously said, "Everything should be made as simple as possible, but not simpler." The key is that second clause, "but not simpler." You can strip away unnecessary complexity, but if you strip away necessary complexity, you've broken it.
That's the wagon problem again. A wagon is a car made simpler than possible. It stripped away the complexity that makes a car, you know, a car.
Perfect example. Einstein was talking about scientific theories, but it applies perfectly to software. You want the simplest architecture that can do the job, not simpler. And figuring out what the job actually requires, that's the hard part.
And that threshold is different for every project. A prototype that needs to work for a demo has a different threshold than a production system that needs to handle a million users. A system that processes credit card transactions has a different threshold than, like, a system that tracks your grocery list.
So now let's talk about the C-suite translation problem. When an executive says, keep it simple, what are they actually asking for?
In my experience, they're asking for a simple experience for the end user. They want the iPhone, not the command line. They want the customer to have an "it just works" moment. And that's a valid goal. The problem is they often don't understand what it takes to get there.
Right. And that's a valid ask. The problem is the communication gap. When they say keep it simple and the developer hears don't build complex architecture, you end up with a mismatch. The developer might underbuild, thinking they're following orders, or they might overbuild anyway, feeling like they have to, go rogue to do the right thing.
So when they say keep it simple and the developer hears don't build complex architecture, but what they really mean is make the user experience simple, you get this disconnect. The developer might build something that's simple under the hood but has a terrible user experience. Or they might build something that's over-engineered internally because they're compensating for unclear requirements.
I've been in that meeting, the one where you explain the architecture, and you can see their eyes glaze over. They nod and say, "Sounds good." But what they're thinking is, "Why is this so complicated? I told you to keep it simple." And you're thinking, "This is simple. This is, the minimum viable architecture to do what you asked for."
Totally. And the hard part is, sometimes they're right. Sometimes we do over-engineer. Sometimes we build abstraction layers for problems we don't have yet. Sometimes we fall in love with the elegance of our own architecture. It's hard to know in the moment whether you're building necessary complexity or just gold plating.
That's where Einstein's principle becomes a diagnostic tool. Is this complexity necessary? Would removing it break the system? If the answer is yes, removing this would break the system, then it's necessary. If the answer is no, the system would still work. It just wouldn't be as, elegant or future-proof, then maybe it's not necessary.
And that's a question developers are better equipped to answer than executives. We know what's load-bearing and what's decorative. The challenge is communicating that in a way that doesn't sound like we're just defending our over-engineering.
Let me share a personal example that still kind of haunts me. A few years ago, I was brought in to help a team that had built a simple system on a tight deadline. Leadership had pushed hard for simplicity. The team had delivered exactly what was asked for, a minimal system that worked for, the happy path.
And let me guess, it worked great until it didn't.
Exactly. It worked for the demo, it worked for the first few users, but as soon as real-world edge cases started hitting it, concurrent users, network failures, malformed data, the kind of stuff that happens in production, it fell apart. And because they'd kept the architecture simple, there was no place to add the complexity they needed. They had to rewrite the whole thing.
They'd stripped out the necessary complexity, the abstractions that would have made the system extensible, the error handling that would have made it resilient, the logging and monitoring that would have made it debuggable, all in the name of, simple.
Right. And here's the thing. I don't blame the team. They were following orders. They'd been told keep it simple, and they interpreted that as don't build anything you don't absolutely need. The problem was they didn't know what they'd need because they hadn't built anything yet. They had no feedback loop, no iteration, just a big design up front that was simple by fiat.
That's Gall's law in action. They tried to build a complex system from scratch and it didn't work. If they'd started with a simple system that worked, then added complexity as they learned what they needed, they might have ended up with something sustainable.
Exactly. And I want to be fair here. I've been on the other side of this too. I've over-engineered. I've built abstraction layers for hypothetical future requirements that never materialized. I've spent days crafting elegant solutions for problems that didn't exist.
I've been on the other side of that too, where I've over-engineered something because I was excited about the architecture, not because the project needed it. I've built flexible systems that were so flexible nobody could figure out how to use them, including me, like 6 months later.
Oh, same here. I think every developer goes through a phase where they think the solution to every problem is more abstraction. You build these Rube Goldberg machines that are technically impressive but practically useless. You've created complexity that doesn't serve the user or the business. It only serves your own ego.
That's the other side of the paradox. We can be the ones who get it wrong too. We can mistake simple for simplistic and underbuild, or we can mistake simple for elegant and overbuild. Both are failures, just, in opposite directions.
So how do we navigate this? How do we strike the balance?
I think it starts with better questions. When someone says keep it simple, you have to dig deeper. Simple for whom? Simple to use or simple to build? Simple today or simple to maintain 6 months from now? What's the half-life of this system? Is this a throwaway prototype or something we're going to be living with for years?
Those are great clarifying questions. And I'd add, what's the cost of failure? If this system goes down, what happens? If the answer is we lose a sale, that's one thing. If the answer is someone could get hurt, that's, you know, very different. The acceptable level of complexity depends on the stakes.
Right. And then there's the communication piece. We need to get better at explaining why complexity is necessary in terms that non-technical stakeholders can understand. Not, we need a message queue for eventual consistency, but we need a way to handle tasks in the background so the user doesn't have to wait for everything to finish before they can move on.
I've started using the car analogy in those conversations. It seems to land better than technical explanations. When someone says, why is this so complicated? I say, it's complicated for the same reason a car has an engine instead of just being a wagon. We're building the engine so the user experience can be, you know, steering wheel, gas, brake.
That's good. It reframes the conversation from complex versus simple to what kind of simple are we building? Are we building the simple that serves the user or the simple that serves the deadline?
Exactly. And that's the question at the heart of all three principles. Gall's Law says, start simple and evolve. Occam's Razor says, don't multiply complexity without reason. Einstein's Principle says, strip away the unnecessary, but keep the essential. All three are pointing at the same truth. Complexity should, you know, serve a purpose.
The moral of the story is simple is a spectrum, not a binary. There's the simple that hides complexity and the simple that removes it. The first kind is a car. The second kind is a wagon. Know which one you're building and why.
Well put. And remember, the goal isn't to avoid complexity. The goal is to make complexity earn its keep. Every moving part should justify its existence. If you can explain why it's there in terms a non-technical person can understand, you're probably, you know, on the right track.
And if you can't, maybe it's time to ask whether you're building a car or a Rube Goldberg machine.
So here's a perfect example of unnecessary complexity that I've been thinking about lately. And it's something that's crept into our own workflows as developers.
Oh, I know exactly where this is going.
Context bloat. Specifically in LLM workflows. We've got MCP servers, Claude skills, cursor markdown files, custom instructions, system prompts, all these different context modifiers that people are loading up thinking they're, you know, supercharging their AI assistant.
Right. And the irony is they might actually be degrading performance.
Exactly. There's this research paper from Stanford called Lost in the Middle, Liu et al., 2023, that showed something fascinating. When you give an LLM a long context and ask it to find information, performance is highest when that information is at the very beginning or end. But when it's buried in the middle, performance degrades significantly, even for models like specifically designed for long context.
So you're saying all those tool definitions, all those skills, all that context we're loading up, we're actually making it harder for the model to find the relevant stuff?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And there's real data on this. There's this concept called the MCP tax. Researchers found that connecting a typical set of developer tools via the model context protocol can consume 55,000 tokens before you even type a single query. That's like nearly half of a standard context window just on tool definitions.
55,000 tokens for context that's like a small novel, just sitting there before you've done anything.
And here's the thing. Anthropic's own research showed that when you present a model with 50 plus tools, accuracy drops to about 49%. Coin flip reliability, not because the model isn't capable, but because the semantic space becomes crowded. Tools have overlapping descriptions, similar names. The model gets, you know, overwhelmed.
So more tools actually makes the agent less capable. That's the paradox.
Right. And this brings me to something that happened recently. Gary Tan, the CEO of Y Combinator, open sourced his personal Claude code setup called GStack. It went viral, 63,000 stars on GitHub. He called it his software factory, 23 specialists, all slash commands, all designed to turn Claude into a virtual engineering team.
I saw that. The TechCrunch article called it God mode, said it found security flaws that teams didn't even know about.
But here's the thing. When you actually look at what's in GStack, it's mostly just prompts. Sophisticated prompt workflows, sure, but at the end of the day, they're text files with instructions. And a lot of developers pointed this out. One vlogger called it a bunch of prompts in a text file. Another said if Gary Tan weren't the CEO of YC, nobody would have, like, cared.
Harsh, but maybe not wrong?
Here's my take. The insight in GStack is real. AI coding works better when you simulate an engineering org structure. CEO review, Eyonggay review, design review, QA, that's a genuine workflow innovation. But the implementation, loading all of that into context for every session, that's where you have to be careful.
Because if you're loading 23 different specialist personas, plus their instructions, plus your codebase context, plus your actual task, you're cramming so much into that context window that the model might struggle to know, you know, which voice to use.
Exactly. And the research backs this up. Benjamin Eckstein wrote about this. He found that running just 3 MCP servers consumed 22,000 tokens before a single prompt. He called it the startup tax. And here's the kicker. Even if you disable tools you're not using, the schemas still get injected into context. You pay the token cost regardless.
So the disabled setting is basically a runtime filter, not a context optimizer. That's sneaky.
Right. And Anthropic's own solution to this problem is telling. They introduced tool search. Instead of loading all tool definitions up front, you start with a single search tool. When you need something specific, it dynamically injects just that definition. Token reduction of 85%, accuracy jumped from 49% to like 74% on Opus 4.
So their fix for context bloat was to stop putting everything in context. That's an admission right there.
It really is. And they also introduced code execution. Instead of passing data through the context window, the model writes a script that runs in a sandbox. The data never enters the LLM's context at all. Standard MCP approach, 150,000 tokens, code execution, 2,000 tokens. That's a, 98.7% reduction.
That's massive. So the lesson here is just because you can load something into context doesn't mean you should.
Precisely. And this connects back to what we were talking about with simplicity. The CEO who says keep it simple wants a simple interface. But the developer who loads up 50 tools, 23 specialist personas, multiple MCP servers, custom instructions for everything, they're creating hidden complexity that degrades the very system they're trying to, optimize.
It's the same pattern. You think you're adding capability, but you're actually adding noise.
Right. And the smarter the model, the more subtle this problem becomes. You might not notice the degradation immediately because the model is still pretty good. But you're leaving performance on the table. You're paying for capability you're like actively degrading.
So what's the practical takeaway? How do we avoid this trap?
A few things. First, audit your context. Treat every token of tool definition as a liability, not an asset. Second, be selective. If you're using GStack, maybe don't load all 23 specialists. Load the ones you actually need for the task at hand. Third, consider dynamic loading. Start minimal, add complexity only when the task, demands it.
And fourth?
Fourth, remember that the model's attention is a finite resource. Every piece of context you add is competing for that attention. The question isn't, will this help? The question is, will this help enough to justify the attention cost?
That's a good framing. It's not about maximizing capability. It's about optimizing the, signal to noise ratio.
Exactly. And honestly, that's a principle that extends way beyond LLMs. It's true for code architecture. It's true for system design. It's true for communication. The more you add, the harder it is to find what matters.
Occam's razor for the AI age.
I like that. Occam's razor for the AI age. The simplest context is usually the most effective one. Not because complexity is bad, but because attention is finite and every token you add is a token the model has to process, categorize, and potentially get distracted by.
So the next time someone tells you to just add another MCP server, another skill, another context modifier, maybe push back. Ask, what's the attention cost? What am I displacing? Is this earning its keep?
Same questions we should be asking about any complexity. The tools change, but the principles of, don't.
Exactly.
All right, that wraps up our deep dive into the simplicity paradox and how it shows up in everything from executive communication to LLM context management. Paul, thanks for bringing the practical perspective on this one.
Always good to connect the dots between theory and practice. These are the conversations that make me rethink how I'm working.
Same here. And to our listeners, if you've got stories about context bloat or keep it simple gone wrong or right, we'd love to hear them. Find us on social media or drop us a line. Until next time, keep your complexity purposeful and your context lean.
And remember, future you will thank present you for asking whether that new tool is actually worth the tokens.